And welcome everyone to another Smart Money Circle show. I'm Adam Sarhan. With me today is Alan Snyder, who's the founder and CEO of AshareX, and they are doing something very interesting. They are democratizing alternatives with fractional ownership. I'll let Alan speak to that. Alan, thank you so much for taking the time and welcome to the Smart Money Circle show.
Thank you for having me. It's fun to be here.
So Alan, I always like to begin. Can you tell us your story and how you got to where you are today, please?
Oh my God, being the young sprout that I am, I'll try to shrink it down a little bit. I'm a serial entrepreneur, maybe an intrapreneur, having been in large financial services companies and started a lot of businesses, including the Discover Card with a couple of other people years ago.
Oh, wow.
Hancock Partners, which is an investment boutique, maybe a micro family office. In that firm, we've been a lender against museum quality fine art for, gosh, a long time. What got me from New York out to California was the privilege of getting my fanny shot off to restructure a company some of your listeners will know called First Executive, the California's largest insurance company. Oh my goodness, 7 years in the penalty box, but everybody got all their money back out of $20 billion, which nobody thought would happen. Well, and then leading, thank you. It was a struggle.
I could imagine, yeah.
Open the door, roll in a hand grenade. Then
seriously.
The more recent company, which I think is germane for today, Adam, is I had this crazy ass idea of giving people the ability to compare insurance policies head to head. And the technology was a little bit more challenging than my prenup brain allowed for. However, battered and bruised, we eventually became the largest seller of auto and home as a non-carrier in the US. And oh my goodness, 800 people. And God bless Allstate. They own it today. The company was called Answer Financial. It still exists. Quite a journey.
Wow, I love that. So you just Discover Card to insurance to setting up a, I guess, website where people could buy and compare insurance, and then you would sell the leads to the insurance company. So you actually wouldn't underwrite the insurance yourself. And then eventually,
Yeah, we were an agent, a national agency, and we used the web and a lot of technology, call centers, to give people the ability to compare. And then buy it 100% online.
Wow, that's great. And then you sold that to Allstate, and then you moved over to AshareX. Can you speak about that, please? Because I'm very interested to hear more about this.
It's pretty interesting, I think. Couple thoughts. Fractionalization of assets has been a mega trend in finance for years and years, whether it's individual stocks, mutual funds. However, the new venture is alternatives. Mm-hmm. Alternatives, a $1 trillion market. What's been the appeal? The appeal has been they're uncorrelated to equities and bonds generally. They're an inflation hedge. Therefore, they're kind of a true diversification for a more standard 60-40 portfolio, if you will. And they can be a store of durable value. If you will, I don't know, kind of an anchor to windward. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the problem. And this is what we sought to solve. The delivery structures for most alternatives are lousy for the investor. Let's look at it for a second. There's arbitrary pricing. A money manager says, Adam, this asset is worth $30 million. And being the steely-eyed guy that you are, you say, yeah, but how do I know that?
Right.
Well, because, Adam, I'm telling you so.
Right.
And a little bit of due diligence. You're skeptical. That's one problem. The manager sets the price. Two, very limited investor control of the underlying assets. It's all 100% delegated. And yet today, you have all these self-directed consumers. Mm-hmm. Third, they're not accessible to a very wide audience, usually using a Reg D structure to get exemption from SEC review. And therefore, the investor criteria to be able to invest are set very high.
Right.
So that's not so great. Fourth, they're expensive.
Right.
There are a lot of fees.
Yeah. And
obviously, the higher the fees, the more challenging it is to earn a great return. Okay. I tilted windmills, clearly, given my misbegotten youth. Arbitrary pricing, I talked about that. Let's do something really different.
Right.
Let's create an auction system to allow fractional investors that can't afford maybe that $30 million asset. Mm-hmm. Let's give them the ability to buy a piece of it. And let's let them compete amongst themselves and then compete against 100% bidder. That auction system didn't exist. We looked high and low.
Right.
We didn't want to build it. It's a full-on trading system. We now have filed 4 very broad patents on what we've built. And son of a gun, the thing works. So now you get true price discovery.
Right.
Independent of everybody, the marketplace. That's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
Second, limited investor control. We said, give the power to the investors. You decide what you're going to pay in the auction. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Then to evidence your ownership, let's say the fractional bidders win. Eureka. We will give them an SEC qualified common stock. Now, there were endless people that said to me, oh, Snyder, you'll never get through the SEC. We did. Maybe with a few darts in our fannies.
Another, yep.
We did it. So you get an SEC qualified security, having been reviewed by the SEC. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, it's a Reg A security, Reg A plus. So that's available to pretty much anybody. So you've solved that limited availability issue. Now, you get that security. We talked about control. Think back on alternatives. Frequently, the alternative manager would say to me, Alan, you're too dumb to know when to sell this asset.
Of course.
So I'm going to charge you 1.5% per year, maybe 2.
Right.
Until, don't let that worry you, Alan, because we have your best interests at heart. We'll decide when to sell it. I said, let's change that paradigm. Let's give that power to the people that put up the money.
Mm-hmm.
The investors that have the security,
mm-hmm.
let's let them, by a simple majority vote, decide that if the secondary market, which would exist, probably a little thin in the equities, if it's trading at a discount, the secondary market,
yeah,
to the net asset value, what the hell? Sell the underlying asset.
Right.
Let that capture of that spread go to the investors when, as, and if they choose to sell the asset. Holy smokies. You know, this is, you know, we hear it all the time. Democratization of this, that, and the other thing. And most of it is hogwash.
Right.
So we said, let's change that. And expenses.
Mm-hmm.
We're acting not as a money manager. This is an exchange like the insurance exchange I mentioned earlier.
Right.
Therefore, the costs are dramatically less than is standard in the business.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what triggered this. Now, let me pull the camera back for a second. What the hell is Acerex? Can you distill it to a single sentence? I'll try. Acerex is a unique and innovative auction marketplace to fractionalize ownership of high-value assets. That's really what it is. It took us, oh my goodness, a month of Sundays to build this puppy.
Right.
We started, the idea was about 3 years ago. We've had a small army building the tech stack to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it was to build the full-on auction trading system.
Yep.
Two, being the youngster I am, I said, gotta have full regulatory compliance.
Of course.
Well, you say graciously, of course. Not always the case. People have skirted the edges, said can't do that. Therefore, we had to integrate and build to 14 different service providers.
Oh, wow.
Oh my goodness. It meant two broker dealers, one for the primary share issuance, one for the secondary trading. That's two. FINRA approved, of course. And then on the onboarding a bidder, I have to do KYC and AML,
mm-hmm.
if you're going to do it properly. And given the credit card experience, said we will integrate to a credit provider so we can evaluate and help the bidder establish a suitable mm-hmm. bidding limit for the buyer.
Understood.
For the bidder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the front end. Then you got to, once the auction happens, you got to collect the money.
Right.
So that means integrating to Plaid, whether it's an ACH, whether it's a check, all of the above, to ingest the money,
mm-hmm.
issue the securities, then have a cash custodian, a bank, a three-way control for safety, because this is high-value stuff. Then you have to keep track of the stock with a transfer agent. Some of your listeners may get a chuckle out of this. When I started, again, dumb Snyder, I said, oh boy, we'll use the blockchain, we'll tokenize it, rub it all over your body. It's really sexy. And we figured out how to do that, but it was dumb. Because all that does, given the SEC's position today, is add costs. Costs are negative for an investor. So we said, yeah, we said, we'll do that in the future when the SEC changes their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the cost low for the investor. Now, one of the things we learned, have you ever been in an auction, Adam?
I have, yes.
Whoa. Well, there's eBay, major art.
I've been to live auctions before. Not many, but a handful.
Here's what we discovered. I don't know if you've experienced this. People go in auctions, but they're never totally comfortable.
Right.
When you buy a car, what do? You test drive the son of a gun.
Right.
That didn't exist for an auction.
Right.
So we created, once we got this to work, we created test drive an auction. So here's what you can do. You can practice your bidding strategy. It's on our website, acerex.com. You can practice your bidding strategy in an auction. So we ask you, do you want to bid as a fractional bidder or 100% bidder?
Right.
And what would you like your bidding limit to be?
Mm-hmm.
And poof. You go into a live auction where we've created hundreds of competitive computer-generated bidders to compete with you.
As a test phase or a trial, almost like paper trading versus real trading.
Well said. Perfect analogy. And every time you go through, the outcome is different.
Okay.
And try different stuff. See how do you like it? So we did all that. And pretty exciting. We conducted our first auction. You know, this took so much time to build. In the end of November, we auctioned off, we're trying to leverage, we will execute this strategy in collectibles, high-end art, a colored diamond, collectible car or cars, all of that. So we did an artwork in the end of November. It's kind of fun. It worked. Eureka. Okay. Now, we had 90 bidders. We processed 457 bids.
Wow.
4 minutes.
Wow.
And then 22 fractional bidders won. We then issued the securities to them, collected the money. Voila, everything worked. So now, we're getting approached. We came out of the closet on this venture, 60 days ago, maybe. And we're getting inquiries from other big players, private equity firm, an electronic bond trading platform, saying, can we use your tech stack for our stuff?
Right.
Now, I don't want you to think ill of me. Shamelessly, we've said, let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's explore that. We're in fact talking to a very large, I can't disclose the name, exchange that's kind of fascinated by what we've built. Now, our focus is, as I said, collectibles. You know, the buzzword these days is, how big's the market? What's the addressable market, Alan?
TAM, yeah.
TAM.
Yeah.
The art world is $1.7 trillion in assets. Big.
Huge, yeah.
How's it performed? Well, low correlation. It meets all the criteria we outlined. Low correlation to equities. Mm-hmm. Low correlation to bonds. All good. It's compounded money for the last 60 years at 8.5%. Ooh, what I particularly like about that market, art moves around the world with currency fluctuations. It's like gold. And I think that's pretty neat as an investor, because if the US market is in the tank, I can sell the art in Abu Dhabi, Doha, London, Hong Kong, because yeah. It's transportable. I have flexibility. So that's one of the significant appeals to me of that market. Now, go a little further. Jewels and gems, a $340 billion market.
Wow.
Collectible cars, I was surprised at this, $37
billion. Wow.
You're seeing all the sports memorabilia and all this kind of stuff. You know, I was on the moon. Here's the flag from the moon. All that stuff is about $40 billion. Now, the double whopper with cheese is the real estate market. $100 trillion of stuff.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I was at a big securities firm. No kudos to me. I built a big real estate syndicator. We were doing about $1 billion a year of principal. I submit to anybody listening that this platform can be used to enhance and improve the distribution, the investor participation in, you know, an apartment building. Maybe not a commercial office building today, but maybe data center, that kind of stuff. This offers all the advantages I talked about. Okay. Here's what we're doing. We're going to have a new auction on March 21st. I'm really excited about it. Having been in the art space for 8 or 9 years, I've seen a lot of deals. This one, to me, as an investor, is maybe the most compelling. Here's what we did. We partnered with a company called Inversion Art. Ever heard of them, Adam?
Inversion Art?
Yeah.
No, I have not.
Think of them as sort of the Y Combinator.
Okay.
Art world.
Got it.
Incubating up-and-coming, emerging contemporary artists where they help them. Now, what do? They do intense due diligence on the artists and the artworks, down to the toenails of the artist.
Wow.
They actually look at tax returns, because the artist says, well, I sold this. And they say, yeah, well, let's prove that.
Prove it, yeah.
And they get the art directly from the artist, so the authenticity and provenance is comfortable. Here's what we did. We picked six of their artists out of their stable, all up and comers. You know, there's a husband and wife couple that did the first NFT, sold it for $1.5 million. They sell other art. They're doing a major set of auctions with Sotheby's in Doha, of all places, the end of March, et cetera, et cetera. So we picked 10 artworks from those six artists, and we're going to auction them off as a single portfolio.
Oh, nice.
March 21. Now, what's the appeal? The investor is really saying, let me be a venture capitalist. I have an instantly diversified portfolio. I have well-vetted artists and artworks. Gee, if even one of them continues their ascent, it'll be a terrific investment.
Got it.
Nobody's ever done this. Second new thing. We said, this is a pretty fierce negotiation, to the artist, look, we would like you to waive your copyright.
Oh, wow.
And we will give to every winner a high resolution digital image of each artwork for personal use. Put it on your PC, what the hell, put it on your phone, and or print it off and hang it on your wall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a great deal because the minimum bid as a fractional bidder is $500. You can't buy from these artists
right
a high res print for that amount of money. So it's really giving an extra benefit to the winner. Now, the last thing we did, it sounds corny, I grant you that, but when an artist does artworks and they're up and coming, they're selling art to put food on the table. But when that art appreciates, they don't get to participate in it.
Right.
Unlike the music business. The music business, you write a song, you get royalties forever through ASCAP.
Right.
Fair.
Yeah.
Artists get screwed. They don't get that.
Right.
We said, let's do something never done in the U.S. Let's give the artists a profit participation in the sale of the art in the sixth, seventh, or eighth year.
Wow.
They were like a puppy with two tails.
Of course.
And I think it's pretty neat. We're truly supporting the art community by doing that. Hopefully, other people will pick it up, but at the moment, that's unique. So that's what we're doing in this March 21st auction. If anybody's interested, look at Acerex. More damn information on the art, the artist, it's all there on our website.
I love it. So, Alan, just to recap here, what you're doing is you're basically democratizing alternatives by offering fractional ownership. So somebody doesn't have to spend $30 million to buy the piece of art. They can spend a few hundred, get a small piece of it, and they get the rights to it also. That's fantastic. So let's talk about, and all that's available at asharex.com. So let's talk about Risk. How do you handle risk, and what are some mistakes you see people make with respect to risk management in business and or in life? I mean, you've been around, you helped us with the Discover Card, launch it from day one. So anywhere you want to go with this, we'd appreciate it.
Now, you're so gracious. You didn't say, Snyder, you're old.
Not at all, because you're not. You're not. If you were old, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing. I'll put it that way.
It's like we heard Joe, President Biden last night talking about hopefully age brings some wisdom. I hope so. Here's some thoughts.
Please.
I mentioned Shinnecock Partners.
Yes.
That's shinnecock.com. I've written 9 articles about doing due diligence. Here's what I would say about risk. Always look at the downside. In at Shinnecock.com, there are 300 questions outlined in an article I wrote, how you can torture any promoter of a particular activity, ask them all these 300 questions. So, bottom line, look at downside.
Got it. Now, do you compare that to upside, or you just say, hey, look at downside and like, what's your worst case scenario? Or how do you put risk with context to reward?
You could, of course, you can set up endless ratios and stuff like that. It's important. And when we get to the end of this, I'll give you a fun way of looking at risk versus reward. But yes, of course, you want to balance both against each other.
Okay, beautiful. What about some timeless lessons along the way, Alan, that you'd like to share with the audience, please?
Here's one where I think I've learned maybe the hard way. Legal agreements count.
Yes, I've learned that too.
When there's a problem and you look back and say, oh gosh, I didn't read it carefully enough, I would say to any listener, really take a hard look at legal agreements, because after the fact, it's too damn late.
Yes.
So that's what I would say there.
I love that. So, timeless mistakes you see people make and how to avoid them.
Well, lessons learned, I guess. It's bring intense due diligence. Look at the people. Do the people, this is really important about the people behind whatever you're working on. Is there a duty of care that they have evidenced for investors?
I love that.
Because when the balderdash hits the fan,
Yep.
are they there to help protect their investors? Or on the upside, do they get a little grabby about some of the upside returns? That I think is important.
That's fantastic. I love that. So, what makes a great leader? And what are some lessons you've learned about leadership that you'd like to share with the audience, please?
Well, gosh, I think back of the insurance company was every day a bomb went off. Leadership has to be defined in the context of a particular situation. Round dulcet note from Alan, but startups are very different than existing large-scale companies.
Yeah.
Startups are different between a marketing startup versus a tech startup. This afternoon, I'm going to be a judge at UCLA on some of these new business plans that they have. And having read some of this last night, it's very different between different types of startups, the leadership skills. That's one learning. Two, in a financially impaired situation,
Yeah.
a workout, if you will, think about it. It's usually very intense, and you must have a much faster cycle time. Unfortunately, therefore, it means that the leadership will be much tougher, more goal-directed.
Got it.
And we all read in, the Wall Street Journal, frequently a leader will parachute into a troubled situation and not be there for a long time, because it's so intense and so goal-directed, you're really pushing very hard.
So Obstacles and adversity. What are some, you mentioned bombs going off, and this I've noticed. Yeah, most successful people go through adversity and handle obstacles different than most. How do you handle adversity, and what are some obstacles you've had to overcome?
I thought about this question. I never really said this.
Okay.
Here's a big reveal. The hardest thing I went through when I was growing up, I was really fortunate. It was a very comfortable environment. It all changed when I was 18. Mm-hmm. My father died unexpectedly.
Ouch, sorry to hear that.
And through a series of oopses, he'd done quite well, but his estate was taxed at 80%. So there wasn't much left.
Wow.
Then this all happened in the spring. A year later, my mother died.
Ooh, sorry to hear that.
Mm. And she'd gone off the reservation a bit. So what was there was even less. Then when I was 20, I had a guardian because I was not in maturity. He died.
Oh, no. Wow.
So for a long time, spring was a pretty dicey time period. And I was thinking, oh, gosh, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
The lesson, you asked about lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool and breezy experience. I learned that if it's going to be, it's up to me.
I love that.
And the other lesson was, it's a long journey. Stay true to your values. Even when you're thinking, well, maybe I can take this shortcut. Because it's a long journey, I encourage others, try to stick truly to your principles.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would say.
I love that. If it's going to be, it's up to me. Alan Schneider, that's a great quote. All right. I look for nuggets of wisdom.
Right.
I look for nuggets of wisdom on the show. It's the whole point. This is definitely going way up there. So thank you for that. And then finally, what's the best piece of advice you'd like to share with the audience or give your 30-year-old self?
Wow. Okay. Adam, are you familiar with the eighth wonder of the world?
Compounding?
Yes.
Okay.
Yay! You are as smart as I think you are.
Thank you.
Put a little dimension on that. Here's the fascinating thing. If you look, the top quartile of pension plans compounds money at about 6%. And they can afford the best advisors in the world. And they get about 6%. I hear investors sometimes say, Alan, I don't get out of bed unless I can get a 25% return.
Right.
Okay. Sounds nice. But here's the challenge for all of us. The 6% return sounds kind of puny sometimes, but you think about it, how many investors double their money every 12 years? Because that's a 6% compound return. I think all of us would be pretty happy if we double our money every 12 years. So that, to me, puts the pickle on the fork.
I love it. I love it. Well, Alan, this has been absolutely fantastic. If you can learn more, go to asharex.com. And best of luck to you, Alan. Hopefully we'll have you on again soon. This has been absolutely fantastic.
Well, it's fun, and you're a pro at this. Thank you.
Thank you kindly. Speak to you soon.